was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky, through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever described heaven as a Kentucky of a place. Today's title is Uncle Sam's Backhanded New Deal Diss. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who flaps gums with greater frequency than a student at a school of dental hygiene. He is an associate professor of communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
You see what we were talking about, Emma? You know, anytime you hear something stupid.
Did you come up with that yourself?
Just call it out.
I made it
He's
all up.
He's at the bottom of the barrel on these things.
Now, that is actually true. I mean, would you start talking about like the 52nd
Flaps
episode?
Gum. There's microphones, there's mouths. I'm naming all the speechy things. Gums, I guess. Teeth.
Voices. And that's about it. Also here with us today is a very special guest, Emma Spychowski. She is the outdoor type who is into yoga, and especially yoga outdoors.
What?
I told you.
Just combine the two words and it makes the thing, right?
Right.
That's exactly how it works in my world. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event will examine a WPA guide to Kentucky that was far from flattering. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
A2 County Country Fair, including Breckenridge and Meade. Camp Knox Military Band will furnish the music. Friday will be Military and School Children's Day. Don't fail to see this part of the program. Your kiddies will enjoy the music and the booming of the 75mm gun.
Hooray!
The infantry drill, too, will fill the heart of every true American. Forget your troubles for a while and shout loud and long for the banner that will head our parades forever.
Okay, then.
Emma, doesn't that sound like a lot of fun to see a 75mm artillery piece go off?
So, is this for kids? Is
that what you're talking about? It's for everybody, but you're going to bring the kids,
yes. And
they're going to really like it when they shoot that cannon.
So the kids are shooting the cannon.
They get to see it. They get to watch it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't think you trust them with shooting the 75mm.
It was 1919, so maybe, you know, started shooting cannons early back then. Have you ever taken a little kid to like one of those reenactments? Because it is a terrifying sound.
They're pretty loud.
They are actually quite loud.
Kids don't like loud sounds.
Yeah, yeah. And so they scream after one goes off.
I've never seen an actual one that you're talking about.
It is kind of neat. I'm sure you've seen the reenactments where they go running at each other and they act it out. They'll shoot cannon off.
Even a black powder rifle is really
loud. Yeah.
I mean, it just reverberates over the hills and everyone's like, wow, wow, wow. And you're like, man, that was a gun.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That was like 3 inches from my ears a second ago.
But it's
cool if you ever get to see in a reenactment battles, not just encampment, but where they battle, it's cool.
Mm. Right. And that one, the French 75, was one of Kentucky's specialties in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
We had a training center for it at Camp Knox, and that's what we learned how to do. And so it sounds like it's just leftover equipment from World War One,
because
it's a 1919 ad. And they're just, hey, well, let's use it at this fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see what's wrong with that. I mean,
you know, people enjoy the spectacle, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it would be something to see. That's it. If the kids can handle the sound, that's the whole thing right there.
That's true.
And Jason, you got something for us, is that right?
Oh, sort of.
Not really?
Like, I know you don't, but I still have to say that sentence.
I forgot, okay?
Well, here's the thing. You know, we've been doing these other things at this point every time, but it's time to move on to the next season. So this is number 10 of the fifth season, right?
Yeah.
For this segment of mine or whatever, I'm going to do a little preview.
Okay.
And so it's called, and Todd can later put in some audio on this if you want to.
He's not gonna.
You got time. But we'll call it something like Great Unknown Kentuckian Acting Showcase. Yes. Which means...
That's a snappy title.
Right. I know. It takes a while. So I had to get it all in there. And you're like, okay, I'll get this.
It works.
I did this especially for Emma because I knew she was coming. So, no, this is great because there are a lot of famous people from Kentucky, right?
True.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people. Maybe people don't realize all the way from Clooney to the other Clooney, right? There's a lot of famous actors. Johnny Depp, we'll get to him. But what I've got is a script that you can give to her.
All right.
This will take about 1 minute. This is a scene from ER with George Clooney, a famous Kentuckian, and we're going to read through the scene. I'll be Ross.
All right.
Dr. Ross, who's Clooney.
Okay.
And Brent will be Dr. Green.
Okay.
Who was Anthony Edwards. He died later of cancer on the show.
Oh, thanks for jinxing me.
Well, he's fine. It was just a scene. And then Emma, of course, will be no one. She'll okay. You know what it means, like stage direction. Stage direction.
Okay.
All right, you ready, Brent?
So I'm green and you're Ross.
You're green, and this is just a normal scene. There's nothing bad about it. It's just...
All right.
All right, go.
Thought you were off at 8.
On my way home, thought you were having dinner with Jen.
She's running late.
Green grabs the ball away, starts shooting.
So are you in the mood to give a little personal advice while we're out here playing basketball? This is something that they needed to have known.
Not really.
Diane's starting to think about our moving in together.
Sorry, Doug, I'm not touching that one.
Did you and Jen live together before you got married?
She says we barely live together now.
Right.
But the answer is no. Her father would have killed us.
Oh, so you bow to the Reverend's wishes, eh?
Russ takes another shot, then lets Green take the ball, leans back against the wall.
I don't like to think of it that way exactly. What are you going to do?
The ball bounces near Ross and he hangs onto it. Green sees that he's serious.
Did you? Oh my God, this is like a teenager. Did you know when you were ready?
Yes.
So if I don't know, that means I'm not ready to move in.
Green just looks at him, then looks away.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Green takes the ball, starts shooting again.
Does your lack of readiness have anything to do with Carol getting married next week?
What is that supposed to mean?
Maybe it'll be liberating.
Green looks over at Ross, who shrugs, says nothing.
Does your lack of readiness have anything to do with my making the next shot?
I got confused too, Brett. yes, completely. yes, completely.
Okay, if I make it, you're ready. If I don't, you're not.
Green aims, throws, and as the ball sails through the air, we...
Cut
scene.
So that was from ER. George Clooney, great American actor. And that we'll be doing more of those next season, Brent. I'm telling you now. You had no idea.
It sounds like a real winner to me.
So wait till we get to Johnny Depp. We'll hear your Johnny Depp.
Ooh.
Or your Chuck Woolery. Or your Muhammad Ali.
Now that one we can do.
Yeah.
That one we can do.
Okay.
All right. Now that it's time for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one.
All right, everybody. The backdrop of this was the Great Depression. People were out of work, especially artists, writers, and there were federal writers' projects that gave employment. And basically, the government just made up jobs for these people and said, hey, go out there and do this, and we will pay you.
Right.
And one of the things they did was a WPA, that's Works Progress Administration, Guide to Kentucky. So these are writers who are being paid to do this who are saying, okay, if you are going to go to Kentucky and meet people there, what will you expect to find?
Okay.
And
so people are going to read the book or back east or somewhere else.
I guess so.
And they're going to travel.
Yeah, I guess you are up in Maryland or Connecticut or someplace, and you're going to read this and say, oh, well, I want to go to Kentucky now.
Yeah. Here's what they must be like.
This is what they are like.
So someone got hired to write all of this as their job.
Yeah. Which
low unemployment.
Which is actually going to probably make you mad at the end of this, that we paid for this. And that's...
But it was depression. People didn't have jobs.
That's true.
Yeah.
So one in four people were out of work.
It's giving them something, yeah.
And that's what the whole thing was about. So let's see here. We're going to take it excerpt by excerpt, and then we're going to see what we think of this Federal Writers Project. So just one highlighted place at a time. Except for Louisville, Kentucky has no large industrial centers. Most of its 2.9 million people dwell in small rural communities. Like other agrarian folk, they bear the mark of their association with the soil. The rural Kentuckian, whether clad in faded overalls or imported woolens, is an individualist.
So dang, what are we right. Proud of it.
That's right. None of this collectivism for me.
What does that mean, the mark of the soil? We're dirty? Our fingernails? What does that mean? They just look like farmers, is what they're saying.
I think that's it. I think it's also that, like, farmers don't really rely on anybody. And that was where they went with that next line there.
Yeah, right.
They're saying
that people don't rely on farmers?
That farmers don't rely on anybody else.
Oh, okay. They're just...
They go out there, they plant the corn.
Yeah, they punch that corn in the face. You will grow.
And then it grows, and then they harvest it, and then they eat it.
I suppose.
I mean, that's the image, right, that you're getting. But didn't he say overalls? What's wrong with the overalls?
Independent men.
Yeah.
Overalls at one point were sort of like the unofficial uniform of Kentucky.
Well,
and that's kind of what they're getting at there.
But what if we wore overalls? Now, that would take some individualism right there.
On a daily basis.
To walk proudly. In the 80s.
I'd rock some overalls.
You know what? I believe you. You, right this very moment, are wearing a denim top.
Yeah, she could tell. She's.
I love the denim.
Of course. Right?
Yeah, I do.
But like some old dude walking around in overalls. Come on. Grow up. No, I don't mean the farmer type. I mean me, like
sometimes.
In the studio. Like, what if I taught my college class?
I just
walked in overalls one day.
Well, today that just wouldn't be acceptable.
Except on one condition.
It'd be hilarious.
Except on one condition, Jason.
What?
I think you can pull it off.
Earth Day?
As long as you only undo one of the overall straps and the other one is fully strapped.
Yes, you're right. And
Make it a fashion statement.
Yeah.
Well, because then people go, oh, well, he's in a play or something. he's doing a video. You know, he wouldn't really wear that. All right, now keep going. But yes, what they're saying is get ready for some backwoods.
That's the tone of this thing. So that's what you're going to expect. For me, it's almost like they have dropped into an alien planet. And they're saying, on the surface of Mars, you can expect red soil.
Right.
And a leftover ice cap.
Be warned, it's red.
The rustic lolling at street corners of towns and villages may give every evidence of being lost or out of place, but try to get the better of him in trade, and often he will prove the master of the situation. So this is sort of a compliment, but it's really backhanded. It's like, yeah, this guy looks like a complete idiot, but he's actually kind of smart.
I suppose I see that.
You're right. Here it is. But it's like a writer, you know, like a novelist wrote it. Very flowery, you know.
Very wordy language. For no reason.
Yeah, right.
It is wordy for no reason.
That's exactly it.
Oh, keep going. He may be ragged.
He may be ragged, dirty, and ignorant. But he is, yeah, exactly.
Where did that come from?
Ragged is kind of negative. Yeah, dirty. I mean, dirty.
That's not enough, though.
Ignorant.
Right.
Got to top it off with that third adjective of the day. But he is still endowed with something of the unawed self-reliance and resourceful wit of the pioneer.
So he's not a total loser. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's it. That's a theme that's going to actually run through this, Emma, that they keep saying, oh, well, this Kentuckians are weird, but it's all explainable because they used to be pioneer types. And if you just kind of wrap your mind around that,
right.
Then you'll look at them, see what they're
doing.
Have a
reason for being that way.
You got a reason.
Yeah,
for
think
being
of it
weird.
As if you're at an amusement park, and everybody down in Kentucky is playing the part of somebody from Kentucky, because they really are
playing the role of themselves. Jason and Brent.
Again, when was this is like 1930.
It's probably 37 or 8 or whatever, but yeah, it's the Depression era.
Maybe 100 years ago, but I mean 200 years ago, but still, it's pretty harsh.
You can
even
see
for
what
the
200
30s.
Years ago.
Yeah, you are talking the 20th century. That's a good point here.
Like the attitude.
Yeah.
You know, further back.
Yeah. Wherever a Kentuckian may be, he is more than willing to boast of the beauties and virtues of his native state. He believes without reservation that Kentucky is the garden spot of the world and is ready to dispute with anyone who questions the claim. In his enthusiasm for his state, he compares with the Methodist preacher whom Timothy Flint heard tell a congregation that heaven is a Kentucky of a place. I bet you've said that before, haven't you, Emma?
Kentucky's a hell of a place.
Yeah, heaven, exactly.
Heaven is a Kentucky of a place.
Lobbed it up to
it. You know. That was easy to mix up. My bad.
No. You just did the 2019 version of it. But they meant the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And now we are actually guilty as charged of this. One time in Kentucky history class, somebody said, "Is there a word for nationalism but just your state?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, but Kentucky does have that."
Yeah. No, I've noticed that for sure. I'm from like near Chicago suburbs, so I moved here around August.
Oh, she lived this.
This is your kind of writing then.
Like. So I would never like come off as this, but, but I see those kinds of people that, not in an offensive way, but people.
This is interesting.
This is. Yeah. Keep going.
People will come off as like, Kentucky's so great and blah, 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 and I don't know.
But we don't see that in Chicago. Like there's got to be some people in the
every
south side
of
Chicago,
people are like,
right?
Chi-town, and like they all represent and everything. But I don't know. I guess it's kind of everywhere in a way.
We represent it in a different way.
I mean, any state would, if state members would feel
their,
that way.
Yeah,
normal.
I see that.
But it's interesting that she's not. You know, she lived in Chicago, that you can compare what people think that Kentucky's like.
Yeah.
And having lived it, you see, okay, they're not those stereotypes. Somebody from Chicago, what would they think?
My family members or like people I know and stuff, they think like Kentucky is definitely more south. Like, you know, they think they have like super thick accents.
Oh,
but I
right.
know there's a little bit of accent, but, you know, they think it's all more like the Alabama stereotype, like that area.
Yeah, like
but
they lump the whole group together.
Foghorn, Leghorn kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Like farms everywhere and all that, but it's not really like
I know. Isn't that? I had the same experience with my relatives that are Midwesterners.
Yeah.
And then they come down and they see, okay. You know, they've been influenced
they're
by
they're disappointed
mood.
That it's normal.
Well, it's normal, yeah,
right.
Of course. You know, it's.
Right.
But Kentucky and other certain states are like the name, the word itself is a joke.
Yeah.
You know, to comedians like that. Mississippi or Florida gets a lot of, you know, just mistreatment.
Yeah.
The Kentuckian's love of family is often illustrated in the way in which politicians elected to give public jobs to their kinsmen. In many instances, the victorious Kentucky politician honestly fails to understand why there is anything blamable in such conduct. When a kinsman needs a job, nepotism is only a word. Parents, grandparents, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, and cousins are part of any family pattern, but to the list of a Kentuckian's cousins, there seems no end. There are not only first and second cousins, there are cousins even to the 10th degree removed. So, everybody's got some family connection somewhere.
So why is
that's
that?
That's how it works. Yes.
I guess part of it is that a lot of the population is what they call old stock population.
They don't move.
Right. And so generation after generation, and like all your aunts are still here, all your uncles are still here.
And they have a lot of kids, so there's like opportunity for lots of relatives.
Yeah, and really, like Emma's situation is sort of unusual. Not a lot of people from Chicago move down here, necessarily.
That's very true.
Just kind of hang out in Chicago or go to a different city or something.
Yeah.
But then Kentucky doesn't have all those cities.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's kind of what they're being stunned about
here. Sure, it's a kind of a snobbish way to look at it.
Oh, that's the entire theme of this writing, for sure. Next to his family, a Kentuckian's home community occupies the place of importance in his fancy. When viewed from a national standpoint, the state itself is of major importance, but on his home ground, a Kentuckian never forgets his native county. He may move to Lexington, Bowling Green, or Louisville during his mature years, but he continuously looks with reverence upon the place of his birth. Now, is that weird outside of Kentucky? Because I don't... Emma, do you know?
Like, I don't know.
Your hometown?
I don't think so.
I mean, I don't think so either.
I don't really think so. I think, I mean,
it's
if
just
you're...
just normal way to feel.
Right. Like, if you're in a suburb and you move somewhere else, it's not really like, you know, you take huge pride and, like, try to go back.
Now, this county thing, we are guilty of that. Was that weird for you, Emma, that we identify by county?
Yeah, yeah. When I started hearing like Marshall County and whatever the other ones are. Honestly, don't remember.
But again, it's not
yeah,
cities,
Ballard
though.
And Livingston.
Yeah.
And,
like, I have friends that refer to that and stuff. And, like, we never really talked about counties. Like, sometimes when I was younger, I didn't realize I was even...
You were in
DuPage
County or something? And
yeah, yeah. And I was in DuPage County, and we didn't really,
you didn't even know that was the county.
I didn't even know until I was probably, like, in middle school or something.
Well, again, it's just a big city.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Visitors to many Kentucky communities will be impressed in finding there are some important relics of American history. Not only have local historians and anthropologists collected important historical relics, but they have also armed themselves with much historical information concerning their community's place in history. A traveler can, if he is lucky, locate the places where D. Boone sealed a bar on this tree in 1760, where John Fitch invented the steamboat. And they've got that in quotes there because they're saying that Fulton invented the steamboat, and these people are just sort of playing up Kentucky's role in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little diss. It's kind of like, it's really hidden and subtle, but it is one. Where Kit Carson was born, where Joseph Bruin built a locomotive, where the first railroad of the West was built, where scores of battles were fought, where Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis were born, where Uncle Tom was sold, where courthouses were scarred by bullets from feudist guns, and innumerable other points of interest. Yep. I guess we're guilty of that, right? Yeah. We see historic markers everywhere and so forth.
Oh, they're everywhere.
That's just commerce, too, though. You want people to come around.
Now, is that unusual in Chicago to see a historic marker every 10 feet?
That's really strange. Like, when I moved here, someone pointed out all the markers that you would see when you're going downtown, and I was just so surprised. But I want to go around and, like, actually read them. I think it's super interesting. But I think a lot of that is also with about the flood and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't a lot of meaningful things like that, I guess, in my smaller suburb. It was, like, 45 minutes outside Chicago.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any, like, the flood or anything.
Right.
Or any big, like, historical moments. So you don't really see a lot of monuments or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, we like markers.
The average Kentuckian may appear a bit confused in his knowledge of history. You see that diss right there?
Yeah, I do.
But he is firmly certain about politics. Kentucky cannot claim first place in political importance, but it tops the list in its keen enjoyment of politics for its own sake. It takes the average Kentuckian only a matter of moments to dispose of the weather and personal health, but he never tires of a political discussion. Perhaps the most obvious thing about Kentucky politics is the fact that there is a continuous campaign. Telephone poles, fence posts, and trees are seldom free of political posters. It is not at all unusual to see campaign workers pulling the tacks out of old posters and using them nailing up new ones. If politics ceased to be practical, Kentuckians would lose an excellent excuse for having community picnics, fried chicken dinners, and fish fries. Even the famed Kentucky burger would lose much of its flavor. Now, I immediately thought of the fancy farm picnic on this.
We do have a fancy farm picnic,
so,
which is food and politics.
Yeah, so on the surface of it, it's political speakers and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the real reason for being there is tons literally of barbecue.
Right, and they just go hand in hand, and it's a celebration, right?
Yeah, the stats on that thing are amazing. If you ever get a chance to see the stats on the fancy
the people
farm
that
picnic,
go,
there's the meat, but there's also like the sheer number of like pigs and cheeses and everything that they.
Oh, I believe. Oh,
yeah.
Did you say cheeses?
I did.
Okay.
Well, whatever it is that they serve.
Put cheese on my barbecue.
Actually, don't knock that because we're going to invent that after the
like,
show.
The Fancy Farm thing is kind of like nationally famous too. We should do a show on that. And maybe that started like, how can we get people to come to our little town and buy our stuff? That's probably how it got started, right?
That'll work. In matters of culture, Kentucky has been forced with other southern states to change its course completely. And for the better is what they're insinuating. It was very slow to adopt the idea of public education, and it was not until after the Civil War that the idea of common schools became thoroughly entrenched in the Kentucky mind. There was no real antagonism to the idea before the war, but a convincing precedent was lacking. When pioneer parents were rearing large families on the frontier, they accepted the idea the family was solely their own responsibility. And so there it is again. Why don't these people like to be educated? We're trying to figure it out. But they were pioneers. So that's why.
So they're saying that was their state of mind.
I mean, it was sufficient.
You've got your farm. Skills. You grow the stuff every year. Right. What else do you need?
That's all you need. Family and an income.
Yeah. And to your point, we have read sources on this program before that say that real education is learned at home. And it's things like how to make a shirt.
Yeah.
And how to churn butter and
all
that stuff.
Right, you won't learn that in school. Correct. Even that can be applied to today's things, too.
Now, wait a minute. Don't go around saying that kind of thing.
Why?
Why? What did she say? I was thinking about something else.
Well, we're actually going to delete that after the show, okay. And you don't have to worry about it. Because Kentuckians have never neglected the pleasures of life. From the time when his forebears hunted through the woods by day and danced about the campfire at night, which is really just like last Thursday, the Kentuckian has been a sporting, pleasure-loving individual. Following the Civil War, travelers through the state remarked that the trains were forever crowded with lighthearted passengers either going to or coming from a dance. Racing, baseball, and football have enjoyed considerable prestige. Horse racing is accepted as a matter of fact. When natives of other states see Kentuckians poring over racing forms on Saturday and crowding into churches on Sunday, it is hard for them to understand the apparent incongruity. Yet it is this devotion to both piety and pleasure which is perhaps the most distinguishing characteristic of the people of modern Kentucky. So they're all a bunch of hypocrites.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And isn't that sad
for them? It's hard to understand how they could do both, right? That's what he's saying.
Yeah, yeah. Why, if you're going to claim to be all religious, why are you over there with the gambling form at Churchill Downs? Mm.
Again, I think it's just because the perspective is somehow they're different, but it sounds like everybody's like that, really.
I'd say you could probably find that sort of
else. Right. And then like in a large area like the United States, you're going to have to – there'll be developments of the nature of that part of that culture, that area. It's just because it's such a large place. But it's interesting how people like – it doesn't take much for you to travel a little bit and you're like, man, these people are different. You know, wherever you go, it's just interesting sociology.
Just
a little.
Just like people grown up too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. We better pay some bills, though. Our sponsor for this part of the program is Stanford's Place. Big dinner, country style, vegetables of all kinds with good old corn cake on the side, only 15 cents. Buttermilk, sweet milk, 5 cents per glass. 106 South 3rd Street at Stanford's Place.
Uh-huh.
So, Emma, how about a glass of buttermilk?
Fresh buttermilk?
Yeah.
Is that what it's implying?
What is this
ad for?
It's a restaurant, and it's from Paducah about the turn of the 20th century. And apparently you can go there and get a glass of buttermilk.
Sounds terrible.
Do people drink that straight up?
Straight up.
Like, with nothing with it.
Give me the glass.
Oh, yeah.
Just a full glass. That would be extra rich.
I mean, I forget about buttermilk. I don't know.
People put it in there.
It's a southern
thing. I think cooking,
thing.
Maybe.
Or is there a southern thing or just an older person thing?
Drinking buttermilk?
Yeah.
Maybe both.
I was
going to
say
sure.
Both.
Yeah.
Probably both.
Hard. Right.
I did try buttermilk up one time. It was not for me.
Did it taste buttery?
It tasted like, well, I was expecting something milkier than that.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't taste like milk that I knew of. And so
compare it to like creamer?
I would rather drink the creamer.
Creamer.
Yeah, I mean, it just was not something I would think people would drink. But apparently back then, you want to go out to eat and pay for it.
I suppose.
Well,
I
it's
know.
Cheap. I mean, it's like, it's
if
just a veggie
me,
plate is what they're giving you here.
Yeah.
Cornbread and veg.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no country meat. Vegetables and that kind of thing. Yeah. And they've got that at Cracker Barrel, right? So I guess all that stuff from Cracker Barrel comes from somewhere?
I guess they had like vegetarians back in the 1800s. I had no idea.
But meat's expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say, meat was probably expensive.
Yeah, I know.
That's probably why. A lot of potatoes and veggies.
I think Emma's got
that sweet
right.
Milk. Is that just milk? Normal milk? Sweet milk?
Yeah,
that's my guess on that. That's regular, right? So butter and regular. Now, Jason, though, we're going to spring the takeaway on you. What'd you learn?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, it was about the writing of the book, right? Yeah, just the same thing. Oh, I end up getting to this part before you ask me sometimes. But I think it's just interesting when you figure, you see, like you hear people describe you, and then you have these, I have these notions of California, mm-hmm. or what Canada is like, or New York City. And so, you know, you can't help but just be kind of put people in that grouping.
Yeah.
Or it's on TV or exaggerated or something.
It's easy to categorize.
Right. Them. And then you go there and it might seem weird at first, but mm-hmm. then it's just people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all the stereotypes of them and how other people perceive them to be, but it's usually just their culture, like how they were grown up.
Exaggerated ideas. And to extrapolate that further to like another country.
Exactly.
You know, they're part of the world. And so you have, if I went to Japan, I'd have all these, the way I think it's going to be. And then I'll discover, well, it's not like that.
They're really different people.
You're saying it won't be like that. It'll be even worse.
No. I'm saying they're like, there'll be elements like, okay, this, you know, this, they have this kind of food or house or whatever.
Yeah.
But certainly they're just human. Everybody's human.
Right. Yeah. Right. They've all grown up in just different ways, but it's how we see it.
Right.
It's all different to other people.
I think Emma and I are going to start singing in a minute. It's getting really hippy-dippy in here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
People and love.
Except everyone.
Yes.
What a takeaway.
Well, there you go then.
We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you heard, well, that's just too bad. Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong, our guest, Emma Spychowski, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, WKCTC, and the rest is history.